Welcome back to The Couch, everybody. Welcome into another NBA episode. I am Jordan Dyer, joined as always by my co-host Max Labelzik. We got a fun episode here today. Max and I were in person for Rockets versus Celtics last night in the TD Garden. It was an incredible game. Unfortunately, the Celtics could not come away with a W in the end. Max, Dillon Brooks went absolutely crazy, had 36 points on 10 made threes, career high in both of those categories. But the story of the night, of course, was Amen Thompson, who not only was the story of last night's game, Max, but has become one of the most intriguing storylines of the entire NBA season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Amen is a star in the making, 100%. And with him, he is a top 1% athlete of the top 1% athletes in the world. Seeing him in person, he especially stood out, just what he was able to do athletically, speed changes, verticality, everything. He has it all. And he was unstoppable last night. And I think he is already extremely impactful defensively with his rebounding. And he does have a somewhat of a passing game, not as much as his twin brother, but it's still there. But what he was able to do offensively last night, taking what the defense was giving him, attacking the rim, he was all over the place last night. And he was the biggest standout to me. I think he's got all the tools to be great. He just needs to add a jumper and he can be, you know, a legit superstar. And I think we're starting to see his sort of coming out party, if you will. And man, Amen Thompson is going to be a problem for a very long time.
Yeah, man, when they like run it through him, when they give him these on-ball reps with him as the ball handler, like, it is so scary just how easily he can get downhill, get into the paint. He's got this really nice touch floater that he won the game with last night on that last second shot. But the last 10 games for Amen Thompson, 19 points, 11.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 3.5 stocks on 62% true shooting. That is absolutely incredible. And it's all happened because, you know, Jabari Smith goes down and Amen gets inserted into this starting lineup and has really kind of found his footing in this starting lineup. I think it's going to be impossible to bring Jabari Smith back into this starting lineup with Amen playing the way that he's playing right now, because last night I think he was the best player on the court. And I think there's an argument that Amen might be the Rockets' most impactful player just right now, and it's only his second season. So I'm with you on the superstar upside. You know, we had a conversation earlier in the season about the Rockets and about what we thought of, you know, their ceiling, what we thought of, you know, their team over the next 5 years. And we kind of said, like, it all kind of hinges on what you think of Amen Thompson's ceiling, because if you think of him as a guy who could become, you know, a true superstar, then their ceiling is incredibly high. And I think, you know, earlier in the season, it was a little bit more like, you know, questionable, like, will he ever be a star? Like, there really isn't a jump shot. The offensive game might not be totally complete. But even since that time, which was maybe just a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago, he has made strides and he has shown so much more potential to be like a true on-ball guy and a guy who can, you know, carry a team in scoring and be an elite defender and be an awesome rebounder. He is, Max, unstoppable in transition. Like, we don't talk about it a lot, you know, like transition scoring as like a skill or a trait among NBA players, but with Amen Thompson, it just sticks out more than anything to me. So he killed the Celtics all night last night in transition, and the Rockets as a team, as they do, killed the Celtics in transition.
Yeah, I think we got caught flat-footed a lot of the possessions last night, where the Rockets missed a good amount of shots in terms of just layups and three-pointers and stuff like that. I mean, last night they shot the shit out of the ball, but in general they miss a lot of shots, but they get a lot of rebounds and they just push the pace, push. And the Celtics, we had to play a lot of bigs last night. We played a lot of Cornette and Kata and Tillman and Kristaps. And because of that, we just were a little bit flat-footed and they took advantage of that. Those guys ran. I mean, Jalen Green did not have a great game last night, but he did have, like, he got smashed in the face. So I think part of it was that. But the first half, he did not play well. He got smashed in the face towards the end of that. And he played all right in the fourth quarter. But the first three quarters, he didn't play that great. He still was pushing the pace and getting the ball up the floor. Fred VanVleet doing the same thing. Dillon Brooks doing the same thing. And obviously, Amen Thompson was doing the same thing. And I think athletically, with him and Tari Eason, this team is just very hard to guard. And they were, Ime has these guys coached up to play hard and to play through everything. And you're seeing it come through with these guys that are hustlers. They're working their ass off. And it felt like Amen is so fast and is able to get to any part of the floor. There is one There's one he got a fast break and he got from half court to a layup in less than a second on three dribbles. And I know Giannis does that pretty consistently on like two dribbles, but Amen Thompson's not that long, and the speed that he got there was incredible.
Well, yeah, I mean, even the fact that you're comparing him to Giannis like speaks to just how much of a freak he is. And I totally I understand the comp. Like Giannis is obviously much bigger. He's a, a big man, technically, of course, but there is kind of that same sentiment where it's like you do kind of have to build a wall now against the men because he's just gonna bully people. He's gonna put his shoulder into people. He's gonna blow by people, and he's gonna get into the lane because he is so physically dominant. So, yeah, I totally get it. But yeah, let's talk about
Also,
the.
wait, real
Yeah,
quick.
go ahead.
Amen was the reason they won. It was not Dillon Brooks. Now, Dillon Brooks was incredible. Dillon Brooks was the beneficiary of everything that Amen was creating. They walled up. We went back and we watched the game, and the Celtics completely were selling out on threes. They were like, these guys, we'll let them shoot and kill us, and they did. That's what happened. But they were fully in drop coverage a lot of the times, just trying to wall up and make sure that Amen was not a factor. And
Yeah.
there was a point, Abby Chin mentioned it in the pro in the you know in the game that we rewatched, and she said that during the break, I mean, at this point Dillon Brooks has like hit seven threes, and they said they're not talking about him, and they're talking about Amen Thompson in the huddle, the Celtics huddle. They're talking about selling out on him, and you could absolutely see that that was the game plan there. I mean, everything they did was to close off that paint and make sure that Amen had to shoot a jumper. And it kind of dismantled the team because, one, he was still able to get to his spots. A lot of them, granted, were transitional baskets or, put backs off layups and stuff like that. He didn't do a ton of like, he did it. He had like maybe four or five shots that he created off the dribble for himself, still very good. But they just were selling out. And that's definitely what beat them, because Tari Eason hit some big threes. Dillon Brooks obviously hit 10 threes, and Fred VanVleet hit some shots. And that's literally what killed them, is the Rockets just were having a good shooting night. So I'm not as terrified about the Celtics as I was coming out of this game, having rewatched it. But I just want to say, like, as good as Amen was last night, he elevated, he is the reason that Brooks had all those open shots.
Yeah, and the other thing I'll say about that is the Celtics game plan, a lot of times this year is to put their big guys, Porzingis, Kornet, Horford, on the other teams, who they think is the worst offensive player. And last night, a lot of the times it was Brooks, and you saw, KP and Kornet guarding him, and Brooks just had an unbelievable game. Multiple plays, one on the left wing over Kornet, where it's just a one-on-one matchup with Brooks versus Kornet. It's just a jab step, pump fake, and then he rises up, just knocks down a shot, and it's like, that's the shot that the Celtics are willing to live with, but Brooks was knocking him down last night. So yeah, credit to him. But I do think that's more of a game plan thing. I also think the Celtics missing Derek White, missing Sam Hauser, missing Al Horford, definitely messed with some of the lineup stuff. Played a lot of two big lineups last night, which the Celtics have definitely tried to get away from over the last few years. Trying to go more to that five out style. But I think we should talk about the Celtics a little bit because. It was kind of an interesting game, and it's an interesting stretch here from the Celtics that a lot of fans are concerned about. Jason Tatum did not have his best night overall. Definitely didn't have a good first half. Ended up 5 for 14 on the night. Only 14 shots max, I thought was, not enough. You want him to be more aggressive, and he definitely turned that aggression on more so in the second half. But just night to night with this Celtics team, I don't see, the same level of aggression or intention, organization that we saw last season.
Well, the first quarter, the reason he didn't shoot that much, he had five shots in the first half. He didn't score. And the reason he wasn't shooting that much is because Kristaps Porzingis and Jaylen Brown were playing incredible in that first
Yeah.
quarter. So he wasn't gonna try and get his shots out of rhythm, and just because those guys were going off. He did the right thing, which was facilitated and made sure that those guys got their touches. And a lot of it was, this two-man game, with whether it's Porzingis with the pick and roll and he's sitting at the top of the key and just hitting that, 28 footer or 25 footer, whatever it is. Or it was a two-man game with Jaylen Brown and Kristaps. But that's why, like, I kind of gave him a pass for the first half. I know there was moments where you would like him to really amp it up because he is that superstar. But we saw in person, the way that he was being guarded, the fact that he got any shots off in general was insane. Their entire game plan was to have Jaylen Brown beat them rather. They were not worried about They were worried about Tatum. That was their big thing. And with Tatum, yes, he honestly, I didn't think he took one bad shot. It was like an early in the shot clock, very deep three that he missed.
Yeah.
The other four shots that he took, I thought were good shots.
Yeah,
And he
I would
just.
push back a little bit on it. I mean, I just thought it was a little bit of settling, like deep step back threes. Like he's coming off the pick and roll and they're chasing
Late.
over. And then the big is showing at the level. And like that's a really tough defense to score against. And Tatum was kind of, I thought, settling. And then in the second half was instead of taking the threes, trying to break down the big man and get in the paint. And I thought he did a lot better job of that in the second half.
Well, when he was doing those settling shots, that was in the second quarter when we needed scoring. He was
Yeah.
trying to make something out of nothing. So I don't fault him for that because those are shots that he does hit too. And like they're no yes
Fair.
shots where he takes them, you're like no, and then he hits them and you're like okay. But so I understand what you're saying there, but I don't think those were bad shots because he only took five shots. So it's not like he was chucking bad. And those were in the second quarter, and he had a lot of open shots too. And I think second half is where Tatum came alive, particularly in the third quarter. And it started with the and one against Tari Eason, I believe. And from there, he realized, oh, I can attack these guys. Sengun is not a good defensive big. I can get to the rim here. He actually, so they he starts attacking Sengun, and Ime makes a smart decision. He goes, all right, we'll throw in Steven Adams because Steven Adams is this huge, like hulking big who is a really good rim protector. And Tatum is like, okay, well, I'll take you on the switch and dribble, 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 and hit these mini jumpers or three pointers. And so he starts attacking Steven Adams on the switch. Steven Adams becomes pretty much unplayable, and they have to pull him and put Sengun back, which was good for the Celtics because offensively, Sengun had nothing going on because defensively the Celtics were locking him down, and Tatum still thought he could get to the rim. So I felt like there was one pass in particular that you and I both were shocked we saw in live. And this is what's so beautiful about going to live games. If you ever have the opportunity, I know it's so expensive, it's a pain in the ass, but you should absolutely try and get to them because you can see a lot more in person. And there was this play where Tatum in the third quarter, he's coming down kind of through the middle. He's doing like a little, not technically an Iverson cut, but that sort of motion where he has the ball and he's kind of going down the middle. And he sees a pass develop three. We watched it in stride happen. He sees a pass develop where Cade is going to be in the dunker spot and going to be coming towards the rim. And he sees it, downloads the information, takes an extra dribble, uses his eyes to look away. He does all this before Cade even knows that he's going to be doing what he's doing, and then passes it to Cade right when he does that movement. And it was an and one, or he got fouled, he missed a shot. What Tatum does facilitating wise is absolutely incredible, and it makes me really frustrated when people shit on Tatum's offense because the way that he has to work to get shots, especially like against the Houston Rockets team where he's being face guarded by Amen Thompson, getting doubled the minute he touches the ball with Dillon Brooks, and then if he gets a switch, he's switching into Tari Eason. All three of those guys are elite defenders, and he was still able to. I know he didn't shoot the ball well. He hit 1-3, but he was still able to get 19 points and contribute to 7 assists. And honestly, the gravity of what he was doing was the reason that Kristaps was able to get 17, was the reason that Jaylen had 28, because he was pulling so many of the defenders in and was able to facilitate out of this. And whether it's a hockey assist or a regular assist, a lot of those guys missed shots too. Like he should have had more than 7 assists the way that he was passing the ball. And I still think what Tatum did last night was really impressive. But I don't, like, what do you think about that?
No, I totally agree. I think his shot wasn't falling, and that's why the box score doesn't look great. But completely agree with just how he's handling these double teams with these blitzes. He is seeing the game at a completely different level than he was earlier in his career, and we've talked about that ad nauseum, on this podcast, on TikTok, on YouTube, everywhere we are. I think Jason Tatum is playing the best basketball of his career last night. Didn't exactly reflect that because the shots didn't fall. But even when the shots don't fall now, like it used to be when his shot wasn't going down, he was almost like taken out of the game. But now he still has such a big impact because of what he's doing as a playmaker, with his vision, with his passing, and just his overall basketball IQ. It's at a completely different level. Would love to see, a guy like Jaylen Brown maybe follow in his footsteps in that area in terms of playmaking and decision making. I'm not sure if Jalen will ever get there, but
I mean,
imagine if he
at
did.
what point is that going to happen, though?
Yeah,
Seriously.
no, I'm being facetious. I don't think
He's
he will get
28.
there.
Like, this is just
Yeah.
what he is. And I think.
Also, I know box score, like plus minus, I'm not the biggest fan of plus minuses, but
Yeah.
Tatum was a plus 11 last night, even though he didn't have a good shooting
Yeah.
game. Let me see. Amen Oh, Dylan Brooks was +16. Like,
Yeah.
I don't know.
And Brown was a minus 12. And this is one reason I do like the plus minus. I agree with you. I don't think it tells the whole story. There are times when it does things right, and this is one of those times where Tatum definitely was a positive, and that plus 11 is right. That feels right. And Brown, it was definitely, he had 28 points, and it was the most out of flow 28 points that you can have. It was Brown is he's got, there's some problems with him. I think he's a really, really great player, but there's this leap that he needs to, or it's not even a leap, it's just like getting slightly better that he needs to take that he just can't. It's he still has problems handling the ball. He still gets in this thing where he's like, I need to be the offense right now, so I'm just gonna put my head down and do a double pump, mid-range foul line extended jumper. Like, that's very heavily contested. He takes early shot clock threes, he takes early shot clock jumpers that are bad. There's a lot of things that he does that are so frustrating because it's without the flow of the offense. And he only had two turnovers last night, but it should have been more. And yes, a large part of what he did last night is what kept them in the game. But there was a lot of things that he did to hurt the team last night. I don't know if there's anything that stuck out to you.
No, it's kind of a weird balance with him because I do love the aggressive mindset. I do love
Yeah.
when he's attacking and getting to the rim and just physically imposing his will on the game and like overpowering guys. I love that part of Jaylen's game, but it's also like sometimes, he is disrupting the flow of the offense and we're trying to play this like five out driving kick style. And sometimes Jaylen's like, eh, I'm just gonna catch it, make my moves and play one-on-one. It's not like to the level where I think it's an overall problem. I think with the roster we have, it's actually okay because we have so many, good decision makers and good shooters, and good spacing around it that I think honestly, when Jaylen does try and, put his head down and go score, like a lot of the times he does score because the paint is open, because our spacing is so good. So last night, I mean, again, like some of the lineups are just tough. Like, that's the thing that I think people miss with the Celtics on some of these games is like, oh, like this is a terrible loss, like to the Rockets. No, it wasn't because they have to play Nemeas Kedah and Cornette in the same lineup. They didn't have, Al Horford, whose spacing
They
is
had to play Drew Peterson and
that.
Jaden
Yeah,
Springer and
exactly. They
like,
Drew
yeah.
Peterson played important minutes. Jaden Springer, like Al Horford's spacing is almost, it's almost scary how important it is for this team. And I'm like
Yeah.
afraid for when Al retires because having that spacing five, like it's so integral to this offense. Obviously, you see it with KP, but then when KP goes out last night and it's Luke and Nemi and, Tillman, the Tillman minutes were really rough. Like the offense is nowhere near the same. So I do think going forward, like, in the next few years, it's going to be really important for the Celtics to continue to find guys who can, stretch the floor from that center position. Where should we go next? Should we talk more Celts? You want to talk overall Rockets? Where's your head at?
Well, I want to talk about maybe some guys that the Celtics should target to fix that problem. I think there's some guys that they could target, right now to fix it. Like, clearly we need bench scoring. Now, we needed it last night because obviously you're missing Hauser and Horford and Derek White. But there's still like Pritchard is a really good microwave option, but we need like this, like you said, like a stretch big that can. I said it last night. I was like, we almost need like an undersized center that can stretch the floor. It is maybe like 6'9", 6'10", but can shoot
Sounds like you're
threes.
describing Al
Yeah, exactly. Which is
Horford.
what we need. But we need like Al Horford backup. So there's things like that. I just think like getting someone like that in there would be really helpful. And the other thing was I think Cornette played very, very well. It did not pop to us when we were watching the game live. Him and Pritchard, I didn't realize were going off like they were. But my dad texted me during the game and was like, "Yeah, thank God Pritchard's shooting well." And I looked up and he had 15, and I was like, "Oh my God, I didn't even realize." So, that was a big thing for sure. But I definitely think that we should absolutely sign Pritchard to an extension or something. I know he's on a cheap contract right now, but I really want Pritchard to stay in this team because he is pretty perfect for what we need. We need someone who can come off the bench and, be a microwave and really heat up. And that's exactly what Pritchard did last night. And if you think about it, if you take away his points, it is not a very close game at all. He had 15 and he hit Some really, really big threes, and he only missed one. He was really impactful last night. And then Cornette, I'm someone that really thinks that the Celtics could benefit from a consolidation trade, if you will. Maybe like fixing up Tillman and Keita, maybe even Cornette, and like just kind of mushing those guys into one better version of those guys. I sort of think Cornette is, I definitely think Cornette is worth keeping because he is, on nights like tonight where it's just a big dominant center in Sengun, you can put Cornette on him and he is able to just kind of like match him size wise and be a little bit of a problem on that end. And then on the other end, he's just able to catch open. Like when the guys are driving, they're just able to kick it to him. When the big steps up, he's wide open in the dunker spot. So I thought Cornette played awesome last night. I just want to give him and Pritchard a shout out.
Yeah, we should shout out all the Celtics bigs last night. I know that we've kind
Yeah.
of crapped on them for like
Not Tillman. Tillman sucked last
fair.
night.
Definitely like creates a spacing issue, but against the Rockets who run a lot of stuff through Alpi Şengün, who doesn't really have a jump shot, who is a really good interior scorer, back to the basket almost like traditional post scorer, like Porzingis, Cornette, Keita. That's a really tough matchup for Şengün, and those guys did a really good job of making everything tough on Alpi, and so they definitely deserve credit for it. I do. Do you want to get into the closing sequence because it was just absolutely
Yeah.
insane? So
Well, let's start
it's.
with the last three. So let's start with the first, the Sengun bucket, then the Tatum bucket, and then we can go to the Thompson bucket.
Yeah. So. The Şengün bucket, what's the score there? It's tied, right? With what, 30
Yeah.
seconds left or
It's
so?
110, 110 with like 30 seconds left.
Yeah. And it looks like there's some switching. Like Jalen, I forget who's involved, but Jalen and
So
somebody. Yeah, you go.
Stops is on Sengun,
Yeah.
and it's a ATO, and Cornette I believe is on like Eason or something, and it's a little ATO that they run, and so the ref holds the ball 2 seconds too long. He was supposed to give the ball to the inbounder, and Sengun was going to come up, and I don't know what the action was itself because he didn't actually complete it because he goes to run up to do what he was supposed to do, and the ref doesn't hand the ball in time, so it's
Yeah.
actually a play that falls apart. And then Sengun just makes a good cut around Cornette, and Cornette slipped. And that's really all it was a broken play, and Cornette just slipped, and he got right past him and he
Yeah,
scored.
he got a face cut off on Cornette, but there was also I think Jalen was guarding the inbounder and Kristaps was chasing a man up to the top, and Jalen like switched with Kristaps, and then there was nobody on the inbounder. Şengün face cuts Luke Cornette. It's a wide open pass, dunk. Then we come down, run a play for Tatum. Tatum catches it just hard, rip through, couple dribbles, puts his shoulder into Amen Thompson, gets to the bucket, lays it in. Really nice play by Tatum. We're all going crazy in the stands. And then the final play, Max, you want to take us through it?
Yeah, so the final play, if you're watching, Cornette's on Amen, and Jalen's in the corner. Who's Jalen on? I can't remember off the top of my head. It doesn't matter. It's probably like
Jalen
Sengun
Green.
or Jalen Green. Okay. And there's an inbounder coming in, and Cornette looks to the sidelines, and Joe Mazzulla yells something. So Cornette tells Jalen Brown's in the corner. He tells Jalen Brown to come switch with him, and then goes to switch, and then realize that the Rockets see this. They start going. So then Cornette is like, oh, fuck it, I'll come back, and comes back, and he's just late on this like weird confusion thing. And it was, that's just what happened. And that's how Amen got open, and that's how he scored. Jordan and I were trying to figure out for the longest time because we didn't see that part of it. We kind of were in an angle where we just weren't looking at the Celtics bench, and we didn't see that part of it. So we were trying to figure out how Amen got so open. And if you were trying to figure that out as well at home, that's what happened is Joe Mazzulla calls, a play change or a defensive change while the Rockets are inbounding the ball, and it just caused some confusion. So both the ATOs for the Rockets were just off of confusion of the Celtics, and that's a fixable thing. So you got to get better with that, obviously. There was a really cool moment that we didn't talk about. So Tatum, the Celtics run an ATO for Tatum, and the in the like in the timeout they're playing Living on a Prayer, right? So. The song ends so they can inbound the ball, and the crowd's going, oh, living on a prayer. And as they're saying the word prayer, like it's just the crowd, there's no song. Tatum lays it in with like 6 seconds left. It was fucking incredible. And rewatching it, that did not show up on the TV. So that was a moment that I want to share on here because it was one of the coolest, like, moments to be a part of where you're just everyone's singing, everyone's standing, and Tatum just lays it in. It was fucking awesome
That
to
was
tie.
very cool. Also, Porzingis getting the tech earlier in the game and then walking
Oh,
down
yeah.
to our side of the court and hyping up the crowd. That was incredible. Yeah, the in-game experience is so fun, especially in Boston. Not that I've been to many other stadiums, but overall, Max, I mean, people are really concerned about the Celtics, you know, through this stretch, a couple bad losses, of course. Like, there's definitely been some execution issues. The end of the Hawks game was disgusting. Turnovers, bad fouls. This game, obviously, like the defensive confusion at the end. There's definitely real execution issues that this team is having, but still, like long term, I do think this team is the most talented team in the league. I think they have, you know, the best two-way ability in the league. They can win in the most amount of ways. Yes, they can shoot you off the floor if their shots are falling, but also if their shots aren't going down, they're an incredible defense, when they're right, when they're fully locked in, when they're fully healthy. So long term, like I don't really have big time concerns about the Celtics. Obviously got to clean up some stuff, got to be a little bit more locked in on the margins, but I still completely believe in this team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Celtics are still I'm worried about them coming out of the East, but I still think they're a very, very solid team. I just think there are other teams that are more hungry. It's the disease of more that Pat Riley's always talked about. It's like once they've won, you're never gonna be as hungry when you're rich as when you were poor trying to get to be rich, if that makes sense. So they already won their championship, and I mean a lot of teams that activate something, but this could be when you're going up against a team like Cleveland or a team like OKC, where it's like they're dying to fucking win, they're dying to get one. That's when it gets a little bit scary because we've seen the Celtics sit on their laurels a little bit and fall behind. But in terms of talent and coaching and what they have available to them, they should be fine still. I think this game, I was pretty bummed leaving the stadium. I thought I was pretty down, but having rewatched it, I seriously think. This wasn't a bad loss by any means, especially because they were losing everybody. They had so many people missing that were really important to this team. So
Yeah.
I think, like you said, not a bad loss. I'm not counting them out at all. This is a tough stretch, though.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in terms of what you're saying, like about the other teams and being scared of coming out of the East, yeah, I get it. Like, it's definitely a much tougher league this year than it was last year. The Celtics' path to winning the championship last year was definitely easier than a lot of other championships. But I still look at teams like the Cavs and I go, you know, unbelievable offense, but they do have some real entry points on defense with Mitchell, with Garland, you know, guys like Niang, Merrill coming off the bench. Like the Celtics, you can't really point to a bunch of guys and be like, oh, we can go at that guy. Like they are a really, really complete defense. And then I look at a team like OKC, who's the other team that we have in this top tier. And of course, they have one of the best defenses that we've seen in the last decade. But then you look at the offensive side of the ball, and I know they've been shooting it really well lately, but you think back to that NBA Cup game against the Bucks, you think about them, you know, in a playoff series, and I don't think they have the shooters to match up with the Celtics. So I still look at the Celtics as the most talented and the most complete roster in the league. But let's take a quick break and we will be right back. All right, coming back, we're gonna do a little bit more of a Rockets deep dive, Max. There has been, you know, a lot of talk about this young Rockets team, obviously having so much success, such a good defense, so much athleticism. They've gotten themselves to this two seed in what everybody thought was, you know, an incredible conference. It is still an incredibly deep conference. Maybe not as talented as we thought at the top, but man, like the Rockets are starting to become a little bit more legit. I think even though they've been the two seed for, you know, the majority of the season, there are a lot of people out there, including myself, that never have taken them seriously as contenders or a real playoff threat. I'm still not totally there with them, like being a true contender, but they're definitely starting to make their case. What do you have to say about that?
I think one, they definitely they're a really well built team. Like they have guys that play really hard and are correct for the system that Ime Udoka has put in. But they also they're definitely a prime candidate for like a consolidation trade if they wanted to push their timeline up. Just think about it, guys who didn't play last night: Jock Lindell, Jeff Green, Cam Whitmore, Reed Sheppard. There's definitely a lot more guys on that list, but still, like those are that's a you put that together for a trade, you're getting someone good. Or even if you trade those guys off separately, you can bring in some good players. What they do have is they have a culture, they have an identity, and they have an idea of who their young guys are. Now, we talked about Jabari Smith maybe not being able to be put back into the lineup as a starter once he comes back, just because of how good Amen has been. It feels like maybe Jabari Smith might be the odd man out. I still think he's really good, so maybe if you can find a way to move someone else in that starting lineup and get him in there, I don't know. But there is definitely some moves to be made, but you don't need to make them right now. And if I'm them, I'm not making any moves. I'm gonna see what I can do in the playoffs. I personally don't know how far they'll get, just because of like what you said, their lack of offense in late games. I mean, in the later part of the games, rather, they struggle to score. That's just kind of what it is. And obviously, in the playoffs, it's harder to score, so maybe that's more conducive to winning. But they don't have a guy that they're like, "Hey, go get me a bucket." And as good as Amen is, and maybe he can become that right now, I think I would be pretty surprised if he was that guy in the playoffs, just because of his lack of shooting. So I do think, I don't know if they're necessarily there yet, but I think they're close.
Yeah, for me, I don't think they're there yet either. And I hate to keep doing this to the Rockets because I do love them and I love watching them play. They have so much exciting young talent. For me, when you are that reliant on scoring in transition, when you're that reliant on scoring on offensive rebounds, those are things that, yes, they will still be able to do in the playoffs, but in the playoffs, teams get back on defense a lot more. They're a lot more focused on boxing out. Like, they're a lot more focused just on all of the little things in the margins that the Rockets already do so well. And I just think that in the playoffs, it comes down much more to it's a much slower game. It's a much more half court based game. You don't see all these runouts all the time of guys just waiting in the backcourt and like not getting back on defense. Like, I really do think that. Yes, the Rockets are more athletic than everybody. They do have unbelievable transition players like Amen Thompson, like Jalen Green. But I just don't see like the half court creation in a playoff series, which is why I worry about them. So I still think if they get like a bad matchup in the first round, I could see them losing, no doubt. And like we said, the West is a very deep conference, and whoever that, let's say the Rockets are the 2 seed, whoever that 7 seed is probably going to be a really good team. And if that 7 seed, like, it could be Dallas. If Dallas gets healthy and turns it on, like, I'm picking Dallas, no doubt, over the Rockets. Because they have a massive talent advantage, they have a massive creation advantage, and like I said, their roster is just more conducive to winning in a playoff series. Now, the Rockets, like, they could make a trade here, right? Like, they could bring in a Jimmy Butler, they could bring in a Zach LaVine, and that would help in a major, major way with their half court scoring. But I'm with you. I'm hanging on to my assets, my young guys. I'm seeing what this team can do, and then I'm maybe thinking about doing something over the summer. It's weird to see a top three pick in Reed Sheppard not get any real run. But again, like, this team is so built on defense. They're built in transition. They are so deep. They're so athletic. Like, maybe Reed just doesn't fit in on this
He
team.
couldn't have played tonight. He would not have
No.
been able to play in this game.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think he's there defensively or
Yeah.
physically. And I don't know what, like, they need shooting so badly, but I don't think they need it badly enough that they should, like, almost sacrifice somewhat of their identity and, like, play Reed over Atari Eason or somebody like that. For me, like, the guy, and he deserves credit, it that needs to go, or maybe you would see go in a potential trade, is Fred VanVleet. And I know Fred has been so good at like getting this offense organized. He's been a solid decision maker. He's been, a true pro and point guard, like we all know that he is. But I just think, the shooting inefficiency, the lack of creation, if you were to be able to flip that contract for, say, a Zach LaVine, this offense goes from, below average to probably slightly above average, and a real, competent offense. But I still don't think it gets you over the top to the point where you're going to be a contender. It would be really, really fun, and it would make them a much more competitive playoff team, I think. But I'm with you. I'm not rushing anything. I don't need to make any decisions right now. Let's just see what this team has and how far they can go. Even if they lose in the first round, this is still a major success of a season for the Rockets.
Yeah, and also they kind of can't make a move right now in terms of just the way the contracts are. Jalen Green is a poison pill, so he just can't be moved until his rookie extension kicks in, which would be this summer. And then Sengun also is in a similar situation. So both of those guys probably can't be moved until the summer. I mean, they could be, but it makes it 100% harder to do that. So I think if there are moves that the Rockets are going to make, it would be after this summer, after they see what they have in the playoffs. And honestly, like if they outperform in the playoffs, so why would you make a move? And if you underperform, then you have your answer, like, all right, maybe we can make some moves here, but they don't really need to accelerate this timeline. So I'm with you. I don't think you need draft picks anymore. I think you got your identity at some point. You just got to like sort of tinker around the edges here and fill some stuff out. I think you have a ton of really good assets that can make you really good right away. And that's why they're so interesting to me because, like you said, Reed Sheppard is going to fetch you something on the open market. He's not meant for this team. I mean, that's just the point. Like, they're going to have to move off from him. He's never going to be a defensive plus, and they're kind of top heavy at that position anyways.
Yeah,
So
I still
they
don't
don't.
know. I don't know if I would say like he's definitely not going to be there. I mean, there's a chance that he could become a better defender and you know,
He's
maybe.
never going to be a plus defender. I'm confident in saying
Well,
that.
that's fine, but is Fred VanVleet a plus defender? Like I don't know.
No,
I
but
think
that's what I'm saying. They're top heavy in his spot. That's why
yeah.
they gotta figure out what to do. And I think it's obviously move Reed Sheppard because clearly you're just not going to play if you're not a defensive if you're not a defensive guy. And I know you said Fred VanVleet, but Fred's a vet and he's still got a lot. Like, I think he's only like 29, so they're still going to obviously stay with him for a bit. And you want that veteran presence anyways, because Fred's been in a lot of big games and he's won a chip. So for me, you don't really want to move off of guys like Fred when you're trying to, build up a young team and try and win it all because he's been there and he's been in those battles. So I think Reed Sheppard is a huge asset that you can pair with someone like a Cam Whitmore or Jabari Smith Jr. if you want to move off of Jabari. Personally, I think Jabari is really great. But if you wanted to move off of those guys, that's a good package for something. So just be on
Now,
the lookout for the Rockets.
yeah, with all that said, there's still this kind of looming ceiling of like, what if Amen just becomes the guy? Like, what if Amen really becomes an on-ball creator and a guy who can, figure out some sort of jump shot and be a guy that, the defense has to commit all their resources to. And then you have like Jalen Green as your number two option instead of your number one creator. And when Jalen's going, like he can take over games. But when he's not, if Amen can be a guy who can run your offense, as well as Alpi, like then that completely changes what you have on this roster. So that's what I think they need to figure out is like, do they have the guy on this roster? And till this point, I would say that I don't think they do, but there's still a chance that a man could become that.
Are you a Jalen Green guy?
Interesting question. I am a believer that Jalen Green is still very much developing. I still think that he has a long way to go, and I still think that he's going to become a very good player. Do I think he will ever be an offensive number one on a championship team? Probably not. But I think he could be a real number two. I think he has the talent. When you have that kind of explosiveness and athleticism, and like you said it last night at the game, you're like, man, Jalen Green's bigger than I thought. Like he's a full 6'5". He's long and he's that explosive of an athlete. And like when his shots go down, like we've seen over this past month, he looks completely unstoppable. So I do think there's still, real room to grow in terms of just his efficiency and his jump shooting, but I think that, his ceiling, or maybe not his ceiling, but my projection for Jalen is a legitimate number two option. So in that respect, yeah, I do believe in Jalen Green. What about you?
I struggle with him because, I mean, like 2 weeks ago, or not even 2 weeks ago, yeah, like 2 weeks ago, he had 42. And
Right.
good, like that's insane. And then the next game, he has 34. But then in the same week span, he's had a 19-point game, a 10-point game, and a 12-point game. So it's like when he's on, but when he's off, he's
Well,
very
it's about
off.
his jump shooting. I mean, for the first month of the season, he was one of the most inefficient pull-up shooters in the league. And then this past month or so, I think he went on a 3-week stretch there where he was like over 40% from three. So when those shots go down, he is completely unguardable because he can create space, with his quickness, his handle, like I said, his explosiveness and athleticism that you can't really teach because he just is that type of separation in shot creator. Like he can get to a lot of shots that other guys just can't get to. For him, it's just about making them. And for a lot of his career, he's been an inefficient shooter, but we see these stretches of like, oh my goodness, if this guy could just be a more consistent shooter, he would be unbelievable.
Absolutely. And I just feel like I don't know, like you said, I don't know if he'll ever be a guy that really just is the number one option and is a hub offensively. I don't know if he is the number two option on a championship team. I think that would be a lot to ask for him. But I could see that. I think that's like probably the highest point of what his ceiling is. I think more realistically, you're probably getting a really great third option on a good team, I think.
Yeah, I would disagree with that, but I mean, we don't have to talk about it. I mean, let's talk about Alpi and what we think of his ceiling, because he has been the hub this year, and it's not like their offense has been great, but when their offense is good, a lot of it stems from Alpi and his passing, his physical dominance in the post. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of his because of his play style, the lack of a jump shot. It's a lot of, hook shots. It's a lot of twos. I do think he's gotten a lot better as a decision maker. He's been a really good driver. And the biggest improvement that I've seen from him this year is his defensive ability as, a roamer, a guy who's being really attentive on defense, coming over and help, being a pretty reliable rim protector for a really good defense. So I do like Alpi, but again, like, I just don't think he has the creation upside to be the number one guy on a championship team. And that's why, like, we really don't believe in the Rockets as contenders, because if they did have that guy, their championship ceiling this year would just be so much higher.
Yeah, I'll be I think I was really, really high on him, but after seeing him in person and seeing some of his recent games, just watching him, I mean, he is very awkward. He is a very awkward mover. And when teams kind of game plan for him, it's not he struggles a little bit. He's still crafty enough to get his own bucket and like to, really put up stats in it. I was saying, I made the joke last night. I was like, he was playing bad, but at the end of the first half, I was like, wow, he's actually on pace for a triple double. Like I think he had like 4 points, 5 rebounds or 6 rebounds and 5 assists. And I was like, wow, he's genuinely on pace for a triple double here. He was 1 rebound and 1 assist short of getting one last night. But yeah, he's very awkward. So I think he's a little bit of an acquired taste, maybe. I definitely don't see him as a number one option on a team. I think there are ways you can game plan for him where if he doesn't develop any sort of shooting, then he's going to be stuck. And people are like, yeah, he's Sabonis. And I think that's probably a very high upside of what he can become. Because if you watch Sabonis and you look at his stats, like, yes, Sabonis is boring, but he is an incredible player and he puts up numbers. So
Yeah, for
I'd
me,
be
I
really
think
happy
Şengün
if Sengun gets
is
there.
a clearly better defender than Sabonis, so
Yeah.
I would definitely take that into account when you're comparing those two. But the other thing about Şengün and Jaylen is they're 22 years old, both of them. Like, they are so young, and we're talking about them in this context of, like, expecting them to carry an offense and be a number one guy. They're just not at that stage of their career yet. And like I said with Jaylen, there is so much room to grow for both of these guys. So they still, like, they can completely, flip this on its head, and with through development and a couple of years of experience, can absolutely become, sky high creators potentially. But for the time being, I just don't see it, and it's hard to see, projecting it that way as well.
Definitely. I wanted to say I went back and looked at Dylan Brooks' threes. I just want to say I counted six of them as open in terms of NBA open, where there was maybe like a guy nearby, but
Late
he was pretty
contest, yeah.
open late contest. Counted six of those as open. Two of them were semi-open and two of them were contested. So just wanted to say, just putting that out there. Celtics love to be like, oh, okay, Caleb Martin. Okay, Dylan Brooks. Okay, Dean Wade. Go ahead and beat us. And then they do. And it gets really frustrating because they never go off their game plan almost to a fault at times, where it's like, hey, I know a game plan is like a practical and it's like trying to work in theorem, right? But I think you should react to the data that you're getting in person and live. And it's like, maybe if Dylan Brooks is going insane, if you're Jaylen Brown, you don't do a 360 around a fucking screen and go under. Sorry. I saw that and that was for his eighth three, I think. And it was
Yeah.
like, how about we get up and guard? And Drew did a really good job of the last three that Dylan Brooks hit. Drew was right there, and that was one of the two contests. So just wanted to say I don't like the Celtics' lack of adapting in game. Like we saw it on Christmas Day with Caleb Martin. They were like, we're gonna let Caleb Martin beat us, and that he does. We're gonna let Dean Wade beat us. He does. Like I get it for a series, but in games it just gets frustrating. So that drove me nuts.
Yeah. I want to
Other
talk
note
about that
from
too. I
oh
tracked the
go ahead.
Brooks threes as well. I counted four of them in transition, and that goes back to, like, the Rockets, yes, being a really good transition team, but also the Celtics not being diligent, getting back quick enough, not matching up right away. And then I counted three off of like lazy or kind of half-assed closeouts, where guys are, like you said, like they're just not great contests. And it is part of the game plan to be like, okay, like we are going to kind of give this shot to Dylan Brooks. If he makes it, so be it. He made one off an offensive rebound, which is just like, it's hard off an O
Yeah.
board. There's chaos. Like it's just a kick out. There's not really anyone to blame on that one. Maybe you could just say, just be more aware of Dylan Brooks is when he's shooting like that. And then, like you said, I counted two pretty good shots, one over Luke Kornet on the left wing that I described, and then the other one, like you said, was over Drew, where Jalen Green was kind of coming off of a screen and driving, and Drew was sitting in the gap, kind of stunting at him, kind of helping hard off of Brooks, and then Drew recovered to Green, like, or recovered to Brooks, got there pretty quickly, got a good contest, and Brooks just made it anyway. So definitely credit to him, but a lot of transition, and like you said, a lot of the stuff with the Celtics game plan that they just didn't adjust.
I think now is a good point where, like, let's just go over some final notes we had because I feel like we've covered everything pretty well. Some final notes. First loss to Ime Udoka. I think they were 8-8 or something like that. So now they're 8-9 against Ime. Or that doesn't make sense. They're 8-1 against Ime. There was no love. There's clearly no love lost between Ime and, or just these two teams. So KP was talking shit to Ime after the technical foul with him and Brooks. Jaylen Brown came over there and started talking shit with Ime too. So there's that. Then Ben Sullivan, if you watch the Rockets, he is the white dude with that's bald with a beard. He's like their lead assistant. He is a shooting coach. He was kind of brought in for Amen Thompson to help him with his shooting. He was talking shit. Him and Ime were talking shit to the C's bench, specifically Derek White, they said on the broadcast after a the missed challenge that the Celtics had against what's it called on when Drew pulled the chair on Sengun. And that was interesting because I mean that's just two guys talking shit. Ben Sullivan, obviously I noticed it in game. I was telling you about it, pointed that out. Another moment, Jalen Green fell and like broke his face. And that happened to be like kind of right where we were sitting. And the Celtics medical staff went right over, and Tari Eason came and shoved one of the medical guys out of the way. They did make up at half court after that. Tari Eason went up to him and apologized from what I saw, but wanted to notice that. In terms of, I had a couple of missed call notes. Are you ready for those?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. Sengun fully steps out of bound first quarter. That's what led to the Amen Thompson oop. Tatum puts up a layup, misses. Sengun gets the ball fully, just is fully out of bounds. Transition oop. So that was a missed call there. Second quarter, 10-13. There was a missed take foul on Aaron Holiday in transition. He tried to take foul Tatum, and he like did the two hand thing. They missed it. They did call a foul, but it was like 2 seconds later, so they didn't call it a take foul. So it was side out. That was not good. Third quarter, 6:30. Brooks. Kornet sets a screen. He's set. He's not moving. It was one of the cleanest screens you could have. Brooks flops. They call it offensive foul on Kornet. That was a pretty big momentum swing there. That was after Brooks hit a three. Fourth quarter, 4:30. Sengun hits the ball out of bound, out of like there's a miss. Tatum goes up and gets the ball in two hands, and Sengun comes through and punches it through his hands. So it's out on Sengun. They don't call it. So the Rockets retain the ball when the Celtics would have actually had the rebound. That was a big one. And then finally, fourth quarter, 4:14, there was a foul, that foul on Drew where he pulls the chair on Alpi, and then they lose the challenge, so they lose a timeout. So they couldn't draw up some stuff. That was abysmal. So I
I
just
hate
wanted
the
to put that out
technical.
there.
Yeah, I mean the Rockets are clearly paying the refs. That's the only reason the Celtics lost. That was just abysmal.
I was trying to watch that non-biased, and I don't there was a there was like I think the refs overall weren't great last night. I just want to put that out there. There was no consistency to calls. Like they would let some hard stuff go, but then they would call a touch foul on the other end. It was very strange. I don't usually complain about the refs, but I thought last night was a bad game from them.
Yeah. Fair enough. I think that is going to wrap it up for us here
Oh
at.
wait, quickly. Anyone that stuck out to you in person?
I mean, Amen. I couldn't take my eyes off of Ben. We were going into the game, like, obviously excited to see the Celtics, but I was like, I can't wait to watch Amen Thompson. And my God, did he deliver? He delivered too much, honestly. Like,
Yeah.
he actually ripped our hearts out at the end of the game because obviously, like, we're watching this guy who's an absolute phenom who. sticks out in the layup line. Like you watch him and you're like, oh my God, how did he just do a dunk? Like he didn't even try. Like, and he's 360 windmill and he's doing all this crazy shit. And so obviously he's standing out and he's so fun to watch. He's a blur on the court. But at the same time, like while you're enjoying all that, you're also rooting for the Celtics. And then Amen gets this crazy game winner at the end, and it's like, I don't know how to feel. Like if it was
Yeah.
against any other team, I would have been so excited. But of course, like we're in person to see the Celtics, and he just ripped our hearts out. So Amen was like just the show of the night for me. Also, like Porzingis, I think stuck out just size wise, like just physicality wise. That guy is a mismatch for like 99% of the league. So I think we already knew that, but seeing it in person, seeing him post guys up and score, be super efficient as a post scorer, I think that stuck out as well.
Okay, for me, Amen, not going to say anything else. You had it all. He was pretty shocking in person. Just the speed, it translates on the TV a little bit, but in person it was like undescribable. Like I was like freaking out at crossovers, and people were
The
like kind of looking at
rebound,
me.
on the
Yeah, the
rewatch
rebound
this
where he
morning,
gets it and puts it back up.
where it goes like off like the top of the
It goes
backboard.
behind the backboard.
Yeah, he goes like he jumps like over Pritchard, like fully extended, comes down, instantly jumps back up and dunks it. Oh my God, dude. Like
Yeah, it
incredible. It
was.
was right in front of us too.
Yeah, that was crazy. I remember like he did a crossover and he like missed a layup, but I was like, oh, and like no one else was saying anything, but it was the speed change was crazy. Another guy that stood out to me, you covered was Porzingis. He just that was the closest I've ever been to him, and my God, just so big, but just really fluid, like a really fluid mover, which is surprising for a guy that size, and just an incredible shooter.
Yeah.
And you don't realize how much, like actually how much space he has to shoot no matter who's contesting him. Which made me think of Wemby, because who's bigger, so Wemby's just gonna be incredible. The other guy, Dylan Brooks, was massive. Didn't realize that. I thought he was like 6'4". He's probably closer to 6'6", 6'7". He is, and he's fucking jacked. So Dylan Brooks, pretty impressive. He stood up like he was next to Jaylen Brown, and they were pretty similar size. So that was interesting. Tari Eason can't dribble. I didn't realize that. That was pretty funny. He is really like not a dribbler at all, which I think you see him be like a little herky jerky, but this guy like genuinely was struggling to dribble. That was interesting to me. Still a very good player, still a guy I like. Just want to note that. Jalen Green, we talked about, massive in person, like probably like a legit 6'4", maybe even bigger, and like he looks lanky on TV. He's built. So that was surprising. And then finally, Sengun stood out to me as one of the most awkward players I've seen live.
Yeah.
I think I can't wait to see. I want to see Jokic very badly, but Sengun, like, I yeah, he I, the way he moves is remarkable. How weird it is. I've never seen a, I don't think I've ever seen a player that awkward like in person. It was very strange. But like I enjoyed watching it. I just was
No,
very
even just
thrown
him
off.
walking around during like dead balls and timeouts and stuff. He
Yeah, his feet, dude, his feet are like flat, but almost at like angled. Like he almost kind of walks on like the balls of his ankles, if that makes sense. It's very
It
weird. He
doesn't make sense,
he's
but
a
I know what you
strange dude.
mean.
Yeah, he's a weird guy, but watching the way he moves, there's not a single athletic looking or not awkward looking movement of him. And I think that's why I love him so much, because it's like, how is this guy very good? And he is.
Yeah, I don't think he gave us a one-legged jumper last night, which I
No, he
was
didn't. But he
disappointed
gave
by.
us like
He took a
a.
floater. He took like a
Yeah.
flat-footed floater from the foul line, which didn't go
Yeah.
in, but it was just like that's nobody else takes that shot. Like what
Just
is that?
the way he's so awkward that people don't know how to guard him. It's
Yeah,
almost to his
100%.
advantage.
Well, because he's also
So,
sneaky athletic. Like he has
yeah.
like a real first step and he has like a little bit of bounce. So it is
Yeah.
awkward, but it's got to be so weird to try and time your steps against him.
He's also massive, and he's very like. He's 6'11", but he's also very thick. Like I think he's probably very strong.
Yeah,
So
definitely.
he was fun to watch, I think, just because of how weird he was. But he didn't have the ball that much, honestly. So
Nah, we couldn't
those were
keep
some
up.
of my notes for who stood out. But yeah, I think that's gonna do it for us. You got anything else?
I'm good.
No. So yeah, Amen Thompson's a star. Celtics are gonna be okay. But thank you all for listening. Please, if you're watching this on YouTube, please like and subscribe and leave a comment. If you're listening to us on Spotify or Apple Music or Prime Podcast or wherever you get these podcasts, please leave a review, leave a 5-star, whatever you need to do, leave a comment. That really helps us out, and we really greatly appreciate it. If you like short form clips of this podcast, you can check those out on me and Jordan's TikToks, on our YouTube Shorts, or our Instagram. All of that stuff is at the link in the description. So please click that link to find all of our content. And yeah, keep doing what you guys are doing. We're doing great numbers wise, and we really appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to us. And we will be back next week with more content. So stay tuned for that. Thank you all for listening, and peace.